You know, when we were kids, down by the creek, you'd go down, catch a frog, maybe, if you're lucky enough, find a turtle or even a snake, the ones that don't bite, and keep it in a shoebox in your house and keep grass around it, try to feed it and keep it around for as long as possible. And what's the harm in that? Well, I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and new rules from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources suggest there may be a harm in that, and we could do some good by changing the way we treat our wild amphibians and reptiles. If you have questions about the new rules, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Rory Pulaski. He's a herpetologist and conservation biologist with our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Rory, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate being here.
And let's start with what the rules used to be before the new rules were implemented. What was Wisconsin allowed to do?
Yes. Yeah, so previous to these rules, the last time the Department of Natural Resources had updated amphibian and reptile rules in Wisconsin for native species was in about the 1990s. So it's been quite a while since we've had any updates. And previously, for a lot of our common species, so we're not, you know, there's separate regulations for endangered species, threatened species. Some of the slightly rarer species had different regulations, but for most of the common species, so American toads, common garter snakes, for those species, individuals in Wisconsin would have been allowed and currently are today allowed to collect those animals, take them from the wild, and keep up to five of them as pets indefinitely. So five toads, five garter snakes, you know, five of any of these common species. And so one of the changes that we're making is changing those time limits and the species that can be kept.
So, but when I'm a kid collecting at the creek, I wouldn't necessarily know native species from invasive species. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between those. So it would be tough for me.
Yep. Yes, exactly. And we do not expect most people, especially children, to know that. that would be a lot. But we don't currently have many invasive amphibians and reptiles in Wisconsin. Those that are released, it can happen. Generally, when it happens, unfortunately, people release, you know, their python outside. Because we're in a lot colder climate than, say, Florida, that has issues with invasive snakes, our climate is so cold that all of those animals will die off in the winter. Typically, it's, you know, not good conditions for them. But aside from that, we definitely had children in mind and just education when we were creating these. We want to keep kids having fun with animals outside. So we do have a 24-hour clause that we've put into the law, kind of informally called the kid clause. and that's, you know, kind of what it's intended for. It gives people 24 hours to hold the animals. So kids can still play with frogs and at their lake. Parents can catch, you know, a lizard and show their kids. You know, someone can catch a snake and show their friend and keep it for 24 hours. So you are still allowed to keep animals for 24 hours. They just need to be returned to the point of capture after that. And that applies to anyone in Wisconsin. But then if anyone is doing education or research, those types of activities will still be allowed to continue. They may need a permit for that, but they could be kept, animals could then be kept longer than 24 hours.
And how key is it to return these reptiles and amphibians to where you found them?
Yeah, it is so important. One of the drivers for these regulations was disease concerns. There's a lot of invasive diseases that are coming up for amphibians and reptiles. And I compare that to what a lot of listeners might know, you know, white nose syndrome in bats, right? That was an invasive disease fungus that was introduced into North America. And as, you know, some people may know, has just had a dramatic, you know, negative impact on our bat species. You know, some populations we've lost 90 to 100% of our bats throughout the U.S. and it's just swept across the country. And there are similar diseases for amphibians and reptiles out there. They haven't had quite the impact yet. And I say yet because that's one of our concerns, right? There's one salamander disease in particular that's in Europe and we don't think it's made it here yet. But disease is one of our biggest concerns. With this, and that gets to your question about putting animals back in the same place. Yeah. So sometimes there are diseases at one pond, right? And maybe the animals have kind of adapted to that. And we don't want to pick up, say, a frog from one pond and then drive it 10 miles and put it back to another pond. Disease is a big issue with that. If it's taken too far, you know, you're introducing different genetics to an area. If you take an animal from southern Wisconsin, release it in northern Wisconsin. And then finally, with our reptiles especially, but even some of our amphibians, they have an amazing ability to imprint on their site, or what we call site fidelity, where it's absolutely amazing, especially in turtles and snakes. It is so strong. If you move a turtle 80 miles away, right, and drop it off and, you know, release it, the poor thing is probably going to spend the rest of its life trying to get back to its home area, which, yeah, of course, is crossing many roads, right? Yeah. And, you know, they're probably not going to make it back if they're too far. So, yeah, a lot of reasons why animals should be, amphibians and reptiles should be released at their home spot.
Rory Pulaski is a herpetologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. New rules for wild and native amphibians and reptiles in the state would prohibit the taking and keeping of these animals as pets. Part of the reason would have to do with disease, as you mentioned, Rory. But as a herpetologist, I'm imagining you as a kid also collecting some frogs and whatever you can find down in the waters.
You know, I've heard a lot of people argue that people aren't going to get into amphibians and reptiles if they aren't allowed to collect and keep pets as a child. I definitely spent a ton of time outside when I was a kid, you know, and enjoyed seeing things, but I personally never had amphibians and reptiles as pets. And that's my specialty now. You know, and I also compare it to birds, right? Like, there are, you know, there are so many birders today looking at eBird, you know, and birds for a long, long time have never been, you can't go outside and collect a cardinal, right? And bring it inside and keep it as a pet. You know, and those are different regulations than what we're talking about here. But one of the reasons we wanted to put these regulations into place is to get amphibians and reptiles, at least legally, more in line with our other vertebrate species in Wisconsin. So our mammals, our fish, our birds, you know, you can't just go out and collect a cardinal and bring it home and look at the amazing number of birders we have in Wisconsin or throughout the country and the world, right?
That's a great comparison. And so be like birders, be a frogger.
Right. Just enjoy them outside, but don't bring them into your living room. Yes,
that makes a lot of sense. What about nuisance animals in Wisconsin, Rory? And specifically, I'm thinking about the venomous snakes that can be found on our property.
Sure. So we previously didn't have any regulations covering nuisance amphibians and reptiles specifically. So we put some regulations in for that. A piece of it, again, was getting back to animals, you know, being released within a mile or so of where they were caught. But regarding the two venomous species, so yes, we have two venomous snakes in Wisconsin, the timber rattlesnake and the eastern Massasauga rattlesnake. The eastern Massasauga rattlesnake is by far our rarest of the two, and it's one species I work on a lot. We only have 8 sites in Wisconsin, and this is a wetland species. So people picture rattlesnakes, and it's true for the timber rattlesnake, right? Like, they like really dry areas, rocky areas, and that's true for the timber rattlesnake. But the Massasauga rattlesnake likes low wetland, swampy areas. And I don't think in 20 years of doing this, I've ever had someone out on a hike or in their yard that had a Massasauga confirmed on their property. So it is incredibly rare. If that would happen, and what we always do for timber rattlesnakes as well, is we'll take calls through our DNR wildlife switchboard, through the DNR, through our where people can call and ask questions. And we do have a list of people internally, and a few externals as well, that will move those animals. So if there is a rattlesnake on someone's property, we will absolutely come ourselves and move that animal a short distance away. And I think one thing to keep in mind too, people don't realize, is that it's fairly rare to find a rattlesnake, even a timber rattlesnake, but we have 4 to 6 species of snakes in Wisconsin that are considered rattlesnake mimics. Huh. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. And it even gets me every time. Like, they'll rattle their tail, and the act of doing that maybe doesn't make a sound, but they're typically in the grass or the leaves. and it will absolutely make a rattling sound. So the fox snake, one of the most common ones, it'll rattle its tail. And my coworkers and I probably get a call every week about what the people think is a rattlesnake, and it's actually a rattlesnake mimic. So
I've been telling this story for decades about finding a rattlesnake in I think where it was in the Quad Cities area. And now you're telling me it most likely would have been a mimic?
Well, I'm sorry to break that to you, but no, it's possible. They do have some rattlesnakes down there too. So it is very possible in the Quad Cities, yes, that it could have been an actual rattlesnake. But
you don't want to find out. You don't want to find out.
No,
the hard
that might be right.
Rory Pulaski, our guest, and we do have a few emails to get to here. Let's start with John and Nina. He runs an exotic animal rescue organization that frequently receives calls from people wanting to surrender native turtles, snakes, frogs, and salamanders that they ended up taking from the wild and later realized they could not care for properly. These regulations help reinforce an important message, says John. Wildlife belongs in the wild. At the same time, John would like to see legal pathways allowing captive-bred native reptiles to continue to be kept. Rory, what do you think?
Yeah, so I really appreciate John's comments. That is, we've been hearing that from several people, and I appreciate John bringing that up, that yes, a lot of the wildlife rehabbers, rescue organizations in Wisconsin, you know, this is not a hypothetical problem. We have so many animals that are collected. You know, people see a cute turtle or snake and they take it home and then realize a week or a month or a year later or 10 years later when the kid has a turtle and is going off to college that they can't care for it. So this is really a problem for a lot of our rehabbers and for our rescue folks as well. So yes, it's definitely, it happens so many times every year. And then in terms of the captive question, that's been something that has come up and we've discussed a fair amount within the DNR when we were working on these regulations. And the current regulations as they are now, and I keep saying now because these new regulations will go into place next year, so January 1st of 2027. We had looked at the captive animals, and some of that is difficult to enforce. We had a whole team of people working on this. It wasn't just me, right? There were several biologists. We had a policy person, a lawyer, multiple wardens involved in this. And a lot of this comes from the enforcement piece was at the discretion or advice of our conservation wardens within the DNR. And so it does get difficult for them to try to enforce where an animal came from. So currently we just, if it's a, you know, Massasauga, it's Massasauga rattlesnake, it's a Massasauga rattlesnake, and origin doesn't matter. And so that's where we did have discussions on that, but that's where we left it. But I appreciate your comments, John. It's definitely something we've been talking about internally.
Our guest is Rory Pulaski, a herpetologist and conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. By the way, that wildlife hotline for the DNR, I was able to use it this weekend to provide an incredible amount of peace of mind. I'm so grateful it's there. And if you need it, you can call 608-267-0866. That's 608-267-0866. That is the right number, right, Rory?
Yes, I believe so. I'm glad you had it because I did not have it in front of me.
Well, I used it this weekend, so I looked it up on my phone and I was very grateful for it. So there are new rules for collecting or keeping wild reptiles and amphibians in Wisconsin. There is a 24-hour kid clause, which could also be a mother's explanation as to why you're not keeping it, and also the request that you return it to where you found it, or just leave it and like a birder, be a frogger and just watch it in its natural habitat. But if you have questions about the DNR's new rules, you are welcome to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you are listening to The Larry Mueller Show. Larry Mueller's back tomorrow starting at 11 on WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today. And don't miss a special garden talk on Friday. It will be Larry's last broadcast live from Bayfield, Wisconsin for Bayfield in Bloom. That's coming up Friday on WPR News. Also, he's making an appearance June 14th, Sunday, June 14th, throwing out the first pitch at the Mallards game, and hope to see you at the, and that's at the Duck Pond in Madison. He's also will be at the Barrymore in Madison for for Wednesday, June 3rd at 7 o'clock for an evening with Larry Mueller and our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. Tickets still available for free at WPR.org/presents. Right now, we're talking about new rules from the Wisconsin DNR about keeping our wild reptiles and amphibians where they lay. If you do pick them up or your kid does, they've got 24 hours. Instead of mom saying, because I said so, is a reason to return them where you found them. It's actually the rules from the DNR called the 24-hour kid clause that you can use. If you've got questions, you're welcome to our conversation, 1-800-642-1234, or email talk at WPR.org. And Bob in Verona emailed us to say he had a pet bull snake that was born in captivity, sold to him in Minnesota 8 years ago. He knows bull snakes are a native species in Wisconsin. Because of that, will Bob need to register that snake with the Wisconsin DNR? And if so, how would he go about it, Rory?
Yes, that is a good question. He will need to register the snake. And we, like I mentioned previously, the regulations, the new regulations don't go into effect until January 1 of 2027. Okay. So the registration process won't even begin until January 1 of 2027. So his 6 or 7 months to do that. So we'll be getting a process in place this summer. It will be widely publicized, and then he'll be able to register. And individuals that have those snakes will have from January 1st of next year through the end of next June. So they'll have 6 full months to register the animals. But nothing they need to do yet, nothing they need to do until January 1. And we're still working with our wardens and some of our tech staff, but it looks like it'll be some kind of online registration where people can put in their name and at least just be registered. So if there are any questions in the future, it can easily be looked up by law enforcement.
What's the importance of this registration as you see it?
Right. So it'll be very important for anyone that has these native animals that wants them grandfathered in, and they're grandfathered for the life of the animal, right? So for a frog, it could be a couple of years. For some of our snakes and turtles, it could be a couple decades. And it's important to have that registration in place. So if there is ever any question, you know, if the public would report seeing something, we get a lot of public tips on things, right? If they, you know, if the public would report that so-and-so has a, you know, a bull snake or, you know, any kind of other species, it's important that we have that and that our law enforcement has that. And so that if our law enforcement needs to respond to any questions or concerns that someone would have, they'd be able to easily look that up and see that this person is legally possessing, you know, X number of species and had those animals grandfathered in, which means they won't be, you know, like a grandfather clause would be, they wouldn't be subject to any of the regulations for that individual animal.
Dave called and couldn't stay with us, and he wanted to know, and perhaps you sort of adds to this answer, Rory, what is the DNR going to do about species that have been kept for a long time? Will they need to be released?
We generally would not recommend releasing any animal.
Okay.
That's been kept, especially if it's been kept for a long period of time. And the reason for that, again, gets back to the disease, right? A lot of these animals could have been, you know, if you have a, you know, pet turtle that you got from the pet store and people grab a painted turtle from the wild, they could have been kept together. And then, you know, any of the diseases that are in the pet trade and the turtle could have been released, you know, could be transferred very easily to the native turtle. And then that would be released back into the wild, right? So that's one of our big concerns with these regulations is not getting those pet trade diseases introduced into the wild population. So yeah, good question. We wouldn't recommend releasing anything if it's been a very short period of time. I'd be happy to get an email on that and work with my coworkers in wildlife health and our veterinarian to determine if it's safe to release it. So the best thing to do if you want to keep the animal, of course, is just to grandfather it. If you don't want to keep the animal, we could recommend some different nature centers or the caller could look at some different nature centers, rehab centers, rescue organizations that could take the animals.
Let's go to Forrest in Stevens Point next. Forrest, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm driving, but I pulled over to ask the question. So I'm listening and I can understand the rules and what you're saying, but I'm actually wondering about, is this a real problem? And when I listen to what you were saying earlier, you're trying to prevent, you know, disease and things being introduced into the wild or, you know, transmitted from one area to another. I contrast that to what is a real problem on the mammal side where we have CWD and we continue to feed and do all these things and we don't put any rules that are, you know, really being enforced. I mean, we put it out there, but we haven't locked it down. So how big of a problem is this really? Is there data to support that? And what are the penalties for somebody who's in violation? And then the next thing, I'm 66, and I had tadpoles as a child. I also had a frog that was blue. But watching that tadpole develop was very educational to me. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, I understand what you're saying in trying to prevent this. But is it a real problem, or is it something we've created on paper, and it becomes a problem because it's on paper?
Forrest, I appreciate that because there is a balance here, and it looks like we're constantly trying to find a way to strike that balance. But, you know, how would you, what's the reason for these rules, and how important is it to protect against disease, and how does this compare against our mammal population control and spreading disease there from our DNR? And I know you're just the herpetologist with a DNR, so, but it is an interesting comparison.
Yes, and Forrest, I appreciate your thoughts on that. So, it you know, and a lot of this kind of gets at the conservation biology that we do is, you know, we have so many different things we need to weigh when we look at this. And one of the reasons we instituted, started looking at changing these laws right now is that, yes, this is an actual problem, on-the-ground problem, and we are very concerned about it. There are diseases that we know of already that exist in Wisconsin that affect amphibians and reptiles, snake fungal disease, rhinovirus, frog or amphibian chytrid fungus. One in particular that we're incredibly worried about is salamander chytrid fungus, or B-sal, and that's in Europe in the pet trade, probably introduced from Europe, from Asia, and it is getting close to being introduced, or concerned it's close to being introduced into North America, which North America is the hotspot for salamanders in globally.
So Rory, if we did nothing, the concern would be that it would be here. So like CWD, this would be about prevention before it gets here. So we're not looking at disease among our amphibians and reptiles the same way we're seeing disease now among our deer population.
Correct. Yes. And I, like you said, I can't comment too much on the deer. I don't work with mammals, but yes, definitely from the disease perspective, we're looking at this from a preventative case, but we also have the data similar to what the previous caller had mentioned, that he sees so many native amphibians and reptiles that have been collected from the wild that people are then trying to dump and get rid of, right? Yeah. So disease is a preventative, but we absolutely know there are so many people out there collecting animals, and that's, we're trying to kind of weigh everything, right, and prevent those diseases from being spread, because we know there are a lot of people collecting animals.
Will there be penalties?
There will be, and I would have to defer that question on exactly what they are to our law enforcement staff, but there are, you know, for most DNR or all perhaps DNR regulations, there are penalties for things, but I can't comment on exactly what those amounts are.
And again, these new regulations go into effect January 1, 2027, right?
Correct. So,
so we've
people
got some
still
time.
Have, yep, there's still plenty of time. Yep.
I've got about a minute left. We're running out of time, Rory, but Michael emailed to ask if ownership of a registered herptile can be transferred to another person.
We generally don't have ownership transferred from person to person. That would be with the grandfather clause, right? At this time, that transfer could still happen, but the grandfather clause would be likely specific to one person.
Rory, I want to thank you so much for explaining these new details for us, for these new rules on behalf of our amphibians and reptiles. And I'd like to have a conversation with you again that isn't so much about the rules, but the actual, you know, amphibians that we love so much and the ones that live amongst us and how we can help live amongst them.
I would love to be back, and thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.
We would definitely do that. Rory Pulaski joining us, herpetologist and conservation biologist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, detailing for us the new rules that are set to take effect January 1 about keeping our wild amphibians and reptiles in the wild and where you found them. And if by chance your kid brings them home, well, in that case, they've got 24 hours to return them to where they found them, and mom's got an excuse as to why they can't be kept. I want to thank you for being a part part of our show today. Also, thanks to our team who make it all possible, Clara Neipert and Joel Patinaw, Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau, and did I mention Larry Mueller returns tomorrow? I want to thank him especially for being so gracious for allowing me to sit in for him today. And again, he'll be with you tomorrow to take a look at invasive plant species, the return of the wild turkeys to our Wisconsin landscape, as well as an update on our whooping cranes from the International Crane Foundation. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show.